Next case for argument this morning is Kodish against the Oakland Terrace Fire Protection District. Mr. Abbott.
Good morning, Judge. Good morning, panel. May it please the Court, my name is Gregory Abbott, and I am the attorney for Brian Kodish, who is the plaintiff and appellant in this matter. In this case, the district court entered a granted summary judgment on behalf of the defendants and against the plaintiff on count one of the plaintiff's complaint. Count one is the federal claim, which is an allegation that Section 1983 was violated and that the plaintiff was terminated in violation of his due process rights and his First Amendment rights.
Employment was terminated. The plaintiff is still alive.
I'm sorry. His employment was terminated. Correct. So the issue boils down to whether or not the decision to enter summary judgment was correct or not. I suggest that it's not. I believe there was numerous facts on both sides of the issue. Regarding the due process argument, we base our claim on the Fire Protection District Act, 70 ILCS 705/16.13B. It says, no officer or member of the fire department of any protection district who has held that position for 1 year shall be removed or discharged except for just cause upon written charges specified in the complainant, and it also includes some other due process rights in there. There was no dispute that Brian Kodish held the position of firefighter with Oak Brook Terrace for more than 1 year. He was employed there for 14 months before having his employment terminated.
Mr. Abbott, I would like to just ask you some factual points, if I might. Does Mr. Kodish agree that there was an incident in which he and another firefighter were arguing and the chief was called in to de-escalate the situation?
Yes, that did happen. There was a dispute over who started it and why, but there was an incident and the chief was called.
Well, if a fire chief has to be called in because two firefighters are having an all-out confrontation, why shouldn't they be fired? I mean, fire departments, police departments, these men really have to rely on each other for their lives. Wouldn't that really be reason enough to terminate?
Well, I don't believe it should, because they use progressive discipline, and that's in their code. And for this instance, Chief Sebesto tried to make out that this was such a serious incident, but the fact is Brian Kodish was never even reprimanded for this. Oak Brook Terrace Fire Protection District uses progressive discipline. They have an oral reprimand that they'll put into writing. They have a written reprimand.
He was not reprimanded for that?
He was not reprimanded. There was no oral reprimand, no written reprimand, no suspension.
How specific is this code? Does it specify what kinds of discipline ought to be taken for what kind of offense?
Well, it's kind of your generic code, which says that they are to employ progressive discipline, and that you're supposed to start with an oral reprimand. But it also gives the Fire Protection District the leeway, if they choose, if they think it's serious enough, they can terminate without doing the progressive discipline, if they think the offense is serious enough. So I guess, you know, if this was really an issue, and I think part of the problem was the fight was over, tangentially related to union issues. And there was a dispute over who really started it. Brian Kodish's version of that incident is much different than the other person that was involved in it. And I think part of the reason why there was no discipline instituted against Brian Kodish for that was because there was some concern over who. It wasn't that one person was clearly at fault and one person was not. And I think part of the things we have to know, too, is in a fire department, these people live together. You know, they're like families. They're going to have arguments. This isn't your typical workplace where you punch the clock at 9 and you leave at 5. These are people that eat, together. They work out in the weight room together. They fight fires together. They're like family, and you're going to get, I think, you're going to have situations where you're going to have some personality conflicts.
That's different than having a fight that the chief has to leave his family and come in to break up.
Correct. But
and these men also have to be able to go out in an emergency situation and work together.
And if they had terminated his employment after that fight, then I think there's a reasonable argument that that was a serious offense that warranted termination. But the fact is, I'm not sure, from most of the testimony, there was no blow, nobody hit the other. One person supposedly jumped over a table at the other, and they were arguing they were separated. But if it was, could that be serious enough for termination? Possibly. But if it's serious enough for termination, I would think that they would at least have issued my client an oral reprimand, if not a written reprimand, if not a suspension. They did none of that. So I think it's sort of after the fact trying to make the record look good.
Mr. Abbott, can we move on to the second count, one based on the First Amendment? And I guess my first question is are you claiming that he was discharged in retaliation for the exercise of speech rights or of associational rights?
Both. I believe both, because he was trying to unionize and he was using his speech to get there. So I think both are in play here. And I think it comes into play primarily because, I mean, there's numerous points in the record.
What do you do with his remark in his deposition that Chief Sebesta did not punish him in any way?
The context of that remark, I think it's been taken out of context by opposing counsel. The context of that remark was for particular conversations. And he said, well, were you punished for that conversation? And Brian Coates said, no. But obviously, we have a verified complaint that we filed in good faith saying that that was the reason. So I think that that testimony is taken out of context.
I'm sorry, you have an affidavit from your client. So
yes.
I see.
But I think that testimony was taken out of context in the appellee's brief. But, you know, we know that Chief Sebesta said several things, such as he thought that union talk was a non-discussable, having a union was a non-discussable issue. He complained that Brian Kosh kept going on about unions, couldn't let it go after an attorney said that they were not eligible for unionization. Chief Sebesta admits that Kosh was very much, quote, very much pushing for a union.
You're talking about Chief Sebesta's remarks before the in the closed session. Is that what you're?
Well, there's some that were, some of these remarks were made directly to Brian Kodish. Some were made in the closed session. In the closed session, Chief Sebesta told the board that because at one point early in Brian Kodish's employment, Chief Sebesta they asked legal counsel to give an opinion whether or not they were eligible for unionization. The attorney's opinion was that they were not. Brian Kodish was of the belief, through his contacts with the fire union, that there was going to be a change in law that would have made them eligible. And after that, Chief Sebesta told the board that it should have been a non-discussable issue after the attorney's opinion letter was showed to Brian Kodish.
Your client had a confrontation with the town council or the fire district council. What was the environment in which that confrontation took place? He told the lawyer didn't know what he was talking about.
He never told the lawyer that, and I don't think there's any evidence of that. That is Chief Sebesta's take on what Brian Kodish told him.
Understood, yeah. But where did that confrontation take place?
Well, it was a discussion they had after the attorney opinion letter was showed by Chief Sebesta to Brian Kodish, saying, see, you can't be union here. Brian Kodish said
that's... Who else was present at that meeting?
Just the two of them.
Just the two of them. This was not done in front of the firemen?
No.
I see.
No, this was done in Chief Sebesta's, it's my understanding it was done in his office or in a side room they have, whereby he was trying to show Brian Kodish that he did not think that unions were that they were eligible to be unionized.
Turning to the transcript of the closed session meeting, what's your best evidence? This is vague testimony. What's your best evidence that Chief Sebesta was primarily worried about unionization. That's the reason you want to get rid of your client.
I'll tell you why I think that was the issue. Is if you look, it is vague. If someone has discernible job activities that warrant dismissal, you're going to hear them. And Chief Sebesta would have told those to the board. He didn't. If you read that, it's almost gibberish at points. It's just all this ephemeral ideas. But what you do hear is that he accused Brian Kodish of trying to get the exact quote here, trying to screw with what we've established and mess with the system here, or vice versa. What could he be talking about? How do you screw with the system? That's unionization. That's what he's talking about. If someone's just a bad employee, they're not messing with what they've established. They're not screwing with the system that they've created at the firehouse.
Didn't he discuss Mr. Kodish's lack of respect for authority and rules and his unwillingness to work as a member of a team and his negative attitude?
Yes, he did. And what's interesting about that, Judge, is that every reason he gave to the board in closed session, he denied. Chief Sebesta denied in his deposition transcript. When he told the board that Brian Kodish had a, quote, shit attitude, pardon my language. When I asked Chief Sebesta in his deposition, was his attitude positive or negative or bad or good? He said, I believe it was neutral.
So your view is that Chief Sebesta, in effect, used the board as his cat's paw to get this guy fired because Sebesta didn't want a union around.
Exactly.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, and I believe I'm out of time, unless anybody has a...
Mr. Abbott.
Thank you very much.
Mr. DeNolfo.
Morning, Honor. May it please the Court. First thing I'd like to address to the Court is in the fact that Brian Kodish resigned from his position with the Oak Brook Terrace Fire Protection District. Therefore, he relinquished his rights under the Section 1983 due process claim. The Court correctly pointed out that the issue before the Board at the time was whether Brian Kodish was a probationary firefighter. Counsel indicated to the Court that he was relying on 16.13B of the Fire Protection District Act. Running concurrently with that, under the municipal code, is a requirement that all firefighters must serve, and I stress the word serve, a one-year probationary period before they are allowed to avail themselves of the rights set forth in 16.13.
How do we get around the plain meaning of the statute, which states that if you have held the position for a year, you are entitled to these various protections? I understand the policy arguments that the district court and your brief make, but the language of the statute trumps the district's policy of extending the probationary period. I mean, maybe the legislature wanted a simple solution that says if you've held the position for a year, you're entitled to certain protections. That way we don't have to deal with messy questions that, you know, would inevitably arise, like how many hours or days of work equal a year. I mean, what if you're a firefighter who works, does it mean 52 40-hour work weeks? What if you take a vacation? What if you only work 30 hours a week?
I believe he didn't hold the position for 1 year. He was gone for 4 months. There was a 4-month absence when Brian Kodish did not work, and he resigned prior to the extension of his probation. I think if the legislature wanted it to be an anniversary date type thing, they would put there that after having been on the employment rolls for 1 year. It says held the position.
This is, of course, a question of state law. What have the state courts said about it?
Unfortunately, the courts have not specifically spoken to the language of that. The best we can derive, judges, from looking at the cases that deal with probationary periods, and the courts are quite clear of the value of probation and that one cannot be judged during the term of their probation if they're absent for an extended period of time. That's the case we have here. As to the issue of whether they held the position or not, I would submit to the court that has not been addressed, and to date the state courts have not spoken to that. However, looking at the state approach to the interpretation of statutes, when you have two statutes that are working together and on the same subject area, they have to be read as harmonious. So first we have to take the probationary period statute, and that specifically speaks to serving 1 year. I think you got to get through Part A before you can get to Part B, which is whether they held the position or not. In this case, it's undisputed that for 4 months, Brian Kodish did not work. He did not serve in his position as a firefighter. And the very goal of the probationary period is to allow the employer to observe them in the actual conduct of their jobs.
See, I understand all the policy reasons for interpreting the the statute to mean that a person must have worked the equivalent of a year before probation ends, but it isn't what the statute says.
I think we should try to avoid reading into the statute confusion, where I believe when you read the two statutes together, the plain reading would support the position that the defendant in this case has taken, that you have to get through your probationary period before we get to the you held the position. He didn't hold the position for a year. He was gone for 4 months. So he didn't hold it. Even if you take the plain meaning.
Well, he held it. He didn't attend it.
I guess we're probably splitting hairs in the sense that I agree with what Your Honor is saying in that extent, that is one interpretation. But giving the plain reading of the two statutes together would tend to support that he didn't hold it. He didn't go through the year process to get to the point to achieve those rights. That is the position of the district. And that is why I think their policy of extending it is consistent with the intent of the statute requiring 1 year of probation, and it's consistent with the state case law interpreting probationary periods.
If you look at the state cases that you've relied on interpreting probationary periods, what do those statutes say? Do they use the same kind of language as this statute, or they use different language?
The statutes dealing with the 1 year probationary period is actually found in the municipal code, which under the Fire Protection District Act applies unless it's contrary. The cases dealing with police officers are identical. It deals with the same probationary period type analysis. They're on probation for a period of time.
I don't know what a probationary period type analysis is.
I'm sorry, Judge.
I want to know whether the language of the statutes is different.
The statute dealing with probation is identical. In the sense, the only thing that changes is for the fire service, they throw in aspects to deal with EMS that allows for the extension of probation for a period up to 2 years. So they do make a differentiation between police and EMS aspects of the fire service. But otherwise, when you deal with a straight 1 year period for firefighters, it's identical for the police officers that they serve a period of probation similar to that. And the analysis of the cases that we rely upon interprets the same type of approach. It's the same goal, the same aspects, the same issues that are raised. Because just like police officers, firefighters are hired by testing. You don't get an opportunity to observe them. That's why they allow you to observe them on a probationary period, because it's during that time that you'll be able to actually observe them perform their duties and gives you an opportunity to find things that testing can't show.
If I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that the state courts either have held or you believe they would hold that the time, the clock running for the tenure period is the same clock as the clock that's running for the probation period, because the probation period can't be real probation if you've got tenure while you're still on probation.
Correct. And I think the...
Has any state court held that?
Well, they haven't overtly come out and said that, but there's the Kirkendall case that we cite versus Board of Education of Evanston that says that an employee does not fairly serve their probation if they are absent for a long period of time. That's the closest we can come to a court specifically speaking to that issue, Judge. Unfortunately, they haven't, which is part of the novelty of this case and the importance of this case.
We can move to the second issue dealing with the First Amendment situation. Did Chief Sylvester say in his deposition he had no problem with unions?
Chief Sylvester says he did say he had no problems with the union. As a matter of fact, he said in his deposition that when the law changed, allowing for unionization for a lower number of four times, he helped unionize the department.
How do you explain his comments in the closed session to the board, where he clearly seems to take a somewhat different tack?
I disagree with Your Honor that he took a different tack in closed session, and I think the important thing about the closed session transcript is that under the Illinois Open Meetings Act, normally those transcripts aren't discoverable in a process such as this. The court ruled that we had to turn this transcript over. So if anything, that transcript would be more frank than you would find perhaps.
But isn't that the problem? I mean, maybe he was a bit more frank in closed session.
I think he was frank in the closed session, and I don't think any of his views expressed in that closed session show that he has any animus towards the unionization.
None whatsoever.
I disagree with the plaintiff's characterization. The one section he talks about the union is that we got an opinion from our legal counsel that the law says you needed, I believe it was 8 full-time members at that time, to unionize. Brian Kodesh wasn't happy with that. He challenged the authority. He went more to the authority issue than the union issue.
So I understand your colleague. His point is there is more than a whisper of an echo of anti-union animus in that closed session, that the chief, in effect, was indirectly suggesting to the board that they ought to get rid of this guy because he didn't want a union around. He was, in effect, attempting to use the board as his cat's paw to get rid of the union.
With all due respect to counsel, I disagree with that, and I think it minimizes the independent nature of the board. In this case, the chief, when you read the transcript in its context, without sentences taken out of context, the only time that a vague reference to union is mentioned deals with the opinion that they obtained from counsel. And the reason that was brought up was to support the fact that Brian Kodesh continually challenged authority. That was the context in which it was brought up. And just so we're clear, in addition to the comments made in the closed session by the chief, there was a packet of material provided to them that dealt with evaluations, that dealt with reprimands, EMS issues.
That raises the issue of, well, even if there was some anti-union animus involved, would this person have been fired anyway, correct?
Absolutely, he would have, and I believe that...
But I guess the question in my mind is there a jury question on that issue?
I believe it is not, because if you read the transcript in the context in which it was not, in which it was said, there's clearly nothing to do with the union that involved his termination. All of it dealt with confrontations where the chief's called in, EMS issues where he was written up twice for that. And yes, in the confrontation, nobody was disciplined, but they were both told if it happened again, they were going to be fired by the chief, and that's undisputed. And, you know, I think most telling is that Brian Kodesh, the time he gave his deposition before summary judgment motion was filed and he realized the statement he'd made, admitted that nothing he said about the union ever caused them any adverse employment situation. Of course, after we filed the motion, he files what I believe to be a self-serving affidavit in an effort to create a question of fact. But in this case...
Yes, thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, counsel, or judge.
Case is taken under advisement.